Back to First Edition, to the second hour of First Edition on a Monday. Thank you for joining us and sticking with us. Coming up a little bit later in our second hour, Khadija Ali Coleman is back, the creativity coach, the creative midwife, and founder of Liberated Muse Arts Group. She's going to be talking about three ways to rejuvenate your life after a breakup of a relationship. Anyway, so yeah, I'm not really looking forward to that conversation. I'm always looking forward to Khadija being in studio, but you know, that's such a ubiquitous conversation. What do we do after we have a breakup? I don't know. We'll get the answer from her, because I don't know what to do after all that. That's coming up later in this second hour. Before we get to Khadija, Rebecca Schaffner, a mental health professional, is in the studio with me. Her practice is in Towson. And she has a very specific kind of narrative that she's working from as a mental health professional in our city. It's an issue that we talk about on this show all the time, because Baltimore is a city where mental health issues are pervasive, but so many of us there's such a stigma attached to those types of issues. And I swear, I want to do everything in my power to remove that stigmatization, because it is incumbent upon us for just every aspect of healthiness in our city. Rebecca Schaffner, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So one of the issues that you focus on in your practice is the issue of diversity. Mm-hmm. And from your standpoint, you're an immigrant to this country. You mm-hmm. came here in 2005.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't necessarily maybe know or want to acknowledge is that there is a very fast-growing immigrant population in
yes.
Baltimore City. Talk about that.
Yes.
And because just literally talking to you right now in the moment, it didn't register with me just about some of the special issues that immigrant populations may mm-hmm. have coming to a city, not just in the United States, but specifically a city like Baltimore.
Sure. So as an immigrant, it is very, very important to consider mental health and just realize that there is a huge adjustment period just coming to a new country. So you're not only dealing with language issues, but you're also dealing with just simply being in a completely new society where you kind of have to relearn everything that you kind of learned from growing up in your own country. Things like how to take the bus, where to get groceries, how to communicate the best way. The school system is different. The healthcare is just different. So there is a huge adjustment period that takes place as an immigrant. And then also considering immigrants, you also kind of have to consider refugees in this country. So refugees, of course, also have a huge adjustment period. But for most refugees, they did not come to the United States or to Baltimore City because they wanted to. Mm. They came here because they fled persecution. So that is something that we also have to consider, the traumatization that kind of comes along with that.
That's heavy. I mean, mm-hmm. and I mean that literally. It never dawned on me. I know that we have a burgeoning immigrant population in Baltimore City. I understand that. But some of the specific issues that immigrants mm-hmm. face, especially ones who are fleeing oppression, so what do they do? I mean, what do they do when they have to try to adjusting to a new job is hard mm-hmm. enough, mm-hmm. but adjusting, sure. say, someone is coming from the Cameroon and,
sure.
and coming to Baltimore because they have to, because they're forced to. Where do they begin to get the help that they may need in order to help them make the adjustment and the transition to becoming a resident mm-hmm. of the United States and specifically of Baltimore?
Sure. So one important thing that you mentioned earlier is stigma. So in a lot of countries outside of the United States, mental health is really not kind of seen as part of your overall well-being, right? So that's where it starts. Secondly, where do they find help is basically hopefully through their immigration process. So we do have case managers and social workers and therapists working with the immigration and kind of helping, folks from Cameroon or Ghana or wherever they're coming from, helping them kind of get connected to those services. One great organization that's actually here in Baltimore is called the Intercultural Counseling Connection. Okay. And they actually specifically work with refugees and asylees. And you have a lot of mental health clinicians signing up with that organization to see refugees and asylees pro bono. And I actually did sign up with them. And I'm currently actually seeing a refugee pro bono, which is great work that we can do as mental health clinicians. And obviously, just a great thing for refugees to get involved.
Absolutely. And the fact that you do pro bono work, much respect to you for mm-hmm. doing that. And we need more professionals to offer that, because so many people can't afford to.
Yes.
It's a great cost in some circumstances to seek this type of help. But notwithstanding, people still need help.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be more access to pro bono services for people, whether they be immigrants to this country or just poor people who live in mm-hmm. Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, though,
sure.
Ms. Schaffner, you decided to become a mental health professional. As we mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, you're an immigrant born in Germany, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what was it specifically in your life that made you decide to enter into this profession?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, just the adjustment issue that kind of took place for me personally, but also being from a military family.
Uh-huh.
So we were not the typical military family that moved from base to base. My mother is from Germany, and we stayed stateside in Germany. So I grew up in Germany, I went to school in Germany and whatnot, but then also kind of seeing the struggles that military families experience pre and post deployment kind of really hit home to me. And so that is just something that I always wanted to kind of get more involved in. And then obviously, my own experience of being an immigrant and then the military issue just kind of connected with me and resonated with me, and I just wanted to partake in that as a professional.
Outside of the context of issues that are particularly challenge immigrant populations in the city, from your standpoint as a mental health professional, we and as I said, and as I alluded to earlier in the show, stigma,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the Black community, in
mm-hmm.
the Black American community, we just shun the whole notion of seeking help. We're supposed to be strong enough and resilient enough to deal with any issue that we're confronted with. But the reality is we're walking around acting as if we're dealing with issues, and we're really not. We're just bearing them, and it's tearing us up. It's eating us alive, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, from your perspective as a mental health professional specifically, how do you approach people? Or how do you approach people within your practice who are having those types of issues, those types of struggles, just feeling so kind of stigmatized by what they may be going through?
Mm-hmm. So to stigma, I say one thing that is really, really important is awareness and education. And specifically thinking about the African-American community, a lot of times, just like you said, we are kind of growing up as these strong, resilient people who just kind of walk around with this mindset of pulling yourself up by the bootstraps, but not kind of seeking help.
Right.
So education and knowledge is one. And then the things that I say to my clients specifically is, you are not alone. The more you work with someone, the more you actually are kind of opening up and allowing yourself to be vulnerable, whether it is with a mental health clinician or just a friend or someone in your community, the more you realize you are not alone. And it is okay to talk. And you should definitely not suffer in silence, because suffering in silence is going to just create more mental health issues such as depression, PTSD, and things such as suicide, unfortunately.
Let's talk about that. I mean, mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the most prevalent or recurring issues or themes that you're seeing in your practice, what are you seeing from people, regardless of what their background is? What are you typically seeing as far as mental health issues that people are being challenged with?
So just recently, kind of the narrative and the theme that came up in my practice is the fact that a lot of us take a lot of time to care for others, but not for ourselves. So this is where kind of overall well-being really comes into play. In order for you to help others, even as a mental health professional, you have to take care for yourself.
Amen to that. Absolutely.
It's all about self-care. So if your own fuel tank is not full, you cannot do that for others.
Yeah. But how do you even... Sometimes people don't even realize that they're not, or rather they're so used to kind of pushing that feeling down and being, you know, open to others and catering to others and providing service and comfort to others, that sometimes the fact that they are not taking care of themselves, it creeps up on them and they don't even realize it until it's too late, and then they go through some sort of catastrophic scenario. How do you, from your perspective as a mental health professional, how do you train people? How do you help people recognize when they are the ones who need help instead of always helping other people?
It goes back to psychoeducation. So basically explaining to your clients and people just in general what kind of symptoms come along with that. So those kind of symptoms are often things like isolation or not being able to keep a happy and healthy relationship.
Wow.
A lot of sadness or crying spells, a lot of physical tension too. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always have to be mentally. It can also be very physically.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yeo, your host. We're in our second hour on this Monday. I'm in the studio with Rebecca Schaffner. She's a mental health professional with a background. She's an immigrant herself from Germany, and one of her specialties is dealing with and talking to and servicing immigrant populations that have come to Baltimore City and diverse populations in our city as well. But that self-care piece is one that is incredibly important. And I keep saying this. We pride ourselves on being resilient people, Black people in general, but specifically in Baltimore. We talk about being resilient, and that is one of the great qualities of our people. But resiliency is a dual-edged sword, because when you claim resiliency and that you can take anything, unfortunately, you take anything, and sometimes those situations can get the best of you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So talk about some of the specific needs of diverse populations within the city. We talk about the Black community all the time in Baltimore, but this is a very diverse city. Talk about some of the other issues and challenges that some of our more diverse populations are dealing with, and as far as from your perspective is in your practice.
So when you're thinking diversity, you're not only thinking race, you're also thinking sexual orientation.
Truth.
Or gender or age. That kind of taking that in consideration too as a mental health professional. And so the specific needs are, they can vary. It doesn't have to necessarily be the fact that you are of a different gender or that you are an immigrant. You're not necessarily coming in to see a mental health professional because of that diverse identity of yourself. You might just be coming in because you constantly wake up with crying spells or because you have panic attacks that you don't necessarily know where they're coming from. So it's kind of a fine balance as a mental health professional that you need to consider. One of the things that is great and the training that we get is cultural competent care. So as a mental health professional, you have to be kind of very cultural competent and understand that you take into consideration the entire context of the person, and so working with that in the treatment.
Something you just touched upon, I wanted to come back around to it, and just slipped out of my mind that quickly. It was something about diversity, about the issue of diversity, but I lost my thought that quickly. Let's go back to some of the mental illnesses that that you specialize in treating in your practice. What are your specialties?
So I specialize.
Oh, that's what I wanted to say. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
As far as anxiety is concerned,
yes.
That's something that I've heard on this show that I've talked to other mental health professionals that say that they say is something that is more prevalent and on the rise. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute that to? I mean, I have a sense of it, but from your perspective, why is there such a rise in mental health? I mean, rather in anxiety issues with people.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of considering the lifestyle, the American lifestyle as well. So as an immigrant, obviously, you know, the lifestyle in Germany and the lifestyle in other countries is completely different. It's more laid back. You're not always worrying about making money and kind of this kind of go, go, go and rush, busy, busy, busy lifestyle. So that is definitely a part of that, I would say.
Understood. Mm-hmm. Let's take a phone call. Let's go to Carla in Baltimore, who has a question. Carla, you're on with Rebecca Schaffner. She's a mental health professional.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
All right, sis.
How's everybody this evening?
All right.
I'm good. So I just have a question in terms of how do you, as a practitioner, support individuals through mental health first aid so they can recognize the signs and be able to make a proper referral to your services, and I'll take your response off air. Thank you.
Did you get that question?
So what I got out of the question is, how do I support individuals seeking mental health care?
I think that's what Carla was saying.
Okay, so basically what I do, one of the things that people who are looking for a mental health professional can do is they can go online on psychologytoday.com or goodtherapy.org, which is basically a directory of mental health professionals in the area. So they can basically filter for clinicians based on their preferences, based on their location, their gender, their age, and whatnot. And also one of the things that I like to do to make access to mental health care easier is make sure that it is more affordable. So just like I mentioned earlier, either seeing someone on a pro bono basis or seeing someone for maybe $50 or a little less, and just making sure that everyone is being able to get the care that they need and that they deserve.
I know that you part of the reason why you came to the United States is the military background. Was your dad or your mother?
My father.
Your father. What made you stay in Baltimore?
Well, I did my undergraduate studies at Seton Hall in New Jersey, and then I found out about Loyola University, which is a great program, which is where I basically got my graduate degree from. And so I really enjoyed the city. I enjoyed enjoyed the challenges, but I was really intrigued by the challenges of the city. And also just, you know, starting my life here. And I got my first job here in Baltimore. So I kind of got stuck here, but I also really enjoy being here. And since I can't really see myself going anywhere else.
No, I think it's interesting when people choose. I mean, we who are from here, we love it for very specific reasons, and there are other reasons why we don't love it so much, but mm-hmm. it's always interesting to me to hear people who are not from here, especially people who are from other countries, why they choose Baltimore, and typically their answers, move towards they love the city, mm-hmm. and I love it, I know why I love it, but I'm always interested in hearing why other people love it, especially people from other countries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I realized when I first moved here, actually, for graduate school, is the homeless population. Mm. It's just so vast. And I remember talking to my partner about how I really was hoping to eventually get involved in working for the homeless population. And I think that kind of just prompted me also wanting to just focus more on the diverse population as well as underserved population. Stay tuned. Eventually, I will probably work with more homeless population or have a nonprofit that really kind of focuses on their issues as well.
The homeless population, mm-hmm. the people who are experiencing homelessness in Baltimore, the population has been burgeoning for several years, and it has become ubiquitous, unfortunately. So obviously there are myriad mental health issues connected to many of the people who are experiencing homelessness in our city. So any type of help, any service you can provide is really welcome. Let me take one more phone call. Let's go to Reverend Dakeen Napata next. Reverend Napata, you're on First Edition. How you doing? Reverend Napata? Well, let's go to another phone call. Let's go to Lauren next. Lauren, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Thank you so much, and Rebecca, this is fabulous. I'm the director of the Intercultural Counseling Connection, and we are just so happy to have Rebecca involved with our program. And honestly, we could not do what we do, what we've been doing for the last 4.5 or so years without dedicated, talented mental health professionals like herself who are willing and able to work with refugees, asylum seekers, survivors of torture, and others on a no-cost basis.
Thank you,
so
Lauren.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I was able to tune in.
Lauren, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Rebecca, tell people who want to get in touch with you or how mm-hmm. they can get in touch with you so they can, as far as your services, what services you provide and how they can get in touch with you.
Sure. The best way is probably to check out my website, which is therapy-w-rebecca.com. So there are many different other avenues on that website to get in contact with me, in addition to my LinkedIn account and my Facebook account.
Okay. Rebecca Schaffner is a mental health professional setting up her practice. Her practice just beginning fairly recently. In Towson, in the Baltimore area. Rebecca Schaffner, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you for having me.
And all the best to you. Good luck here.
Thanks.
I don't believe in luck. Do the best that you can. I don't believe in luck. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Khadijah Ali Coleman will join us talking about rejuvenating your life after a relationship breakup. Oh, my. Let's go. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Khadijah Ali Coleman, stay tuned. Here on WEAA 88.9, winding down a Monday evening here on First Edition. Khadijah Ali Coleman is in the studio. She is the creativity coach, the creative midwife, and founder of Liberated Muse Arts Group. And Khadijah, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me again.
The reason we were playing Mother's Finest, one of my favorite tracks,
I love, that song too.
Love Changes. That's what our conversation is about.
Yes, it is. This is our theme about acceptance. So,
yes, indeed. I mean, look, I said earlier I didn't want to talk about this. That's not true. I mean, if I never go through another breakup again as long as I live, that would be fine with me.
I know, but
that would be fine with me.
but isn't it something? Don't you really get a sense of who you are? I mean, you have to find the silver lining. You have to find the silver lining.
But see, this is the thing. A buddy of mine, a good friend of mine, Craig. I have not seen Craig in a long time. And years and years, this was a long time
ago.
This
sounds like the setup for a joke.
My boy, Craig. No, it's not. It's not at all. It's just I was coming out of a relationship and I was just you know, like hanging out, doing my thing the way I always do. Mm-hmm. And he said, man, you're a resilient brother. And I was like, it didn't occur to me that that yeah. was true, but it's just, what a mess
it
sometimes.
It can hurt. And it's so interesting because, you know, as we talk about this, it is likened to grief over the, you know, the death of a loved one.
It can be.
Yeah.
Or cannot.
So today, I mean, we're going to be focusing on ways to rejuvenate your life after a relationship, but really taking in consideration that, you know, for, and when I say a relationship, we're talking about relationships longer than a week. Longer than a month.
Okay.
We talk about significant relationships where people have invested, you know.
Real time.
Yeah, real time.
And real energy.
Right, okay. Right.
All right, that's fine.
So do you want to know how I came up with this today?
Please.
So do you watch the show Insecure?
I don't. We've had
Issa Rae?
Yeah, we had her on.
Really?
Yeah, Yuri hooked that up.
Okay.
Didn't we have her on? We did? I thought we had some. Yes, we did.
We're making up stuff? Maybe
no,
anyone from the show?
We had. I thought we had Issa Rae on the show.
Really?
We did. Oh, it was Francesca Ramsey.
Oh, see. They all look the same, Sean.
No, not at all. But Francesca Ramsey, didn't she? I thought she
no,
was.
No. She was YouTube, and now she does things, I think, with MTV. No, it's
she's not on Insecure?
No.
I'm tripping.
It's Issa Rae, and then it's funny that you even say that, though, because one of the co-stars, Yvonne Orji, she used to be my intern.
Really?
I swear to you. And she's amazing. I always tell my daughter, I said, she held you when you were a baby and told you that I should put you in modeling. But they're just a talented cast. But the show is... it's so funny because I thought that I would be out of touch because I'm considerably older than the young people in the show. But it's they deal with classic themes. And really that, you know, the ones that revolve around the central plot of the show is really about this relationship between the protagonist and her boyfriend, who's now, you know, a former lover. And, you know, not to give any more away, but this second season is really about recovering from this breakup that was, the first season was all about.
All right. I jumbled things. Francesca Ramsey, we did have on the show.
Okay.
And she has, I think she was a YouTube star.
Yes.
That got her own show.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes, yes.
And Issa Rae, I binge watched a part of a season.
Yeah. On her, so you know Issa Rae was a YouTube star
yes,
as well.
Yes, yes.
Awkward
so,
black
okay,
girl.
I'm kinda, yes,
yeah,
yes. So I'm
yeah,
cross
yeah, yeah.
kind of pollinating there. But I was watching her show and I thought it was well done, first of all. But I was watching some of those scenarios and thinking back to my
20s. Oh, I know.
And my stomach was hurting.
I know.
I mean,
aren't you like, I'm so glad
my
I'm
God
not back
in heaven.
There.
How on earth? How did I make it?
I know. And then now, but see, and when we were young, we didn't have the social media where you could do the virtual stalking and all of that stuff. We'll have somebody, you know. So I wanted, if we can just listen to this clip. This is what inspired today's segment.
All right, let's listen to that.
In life. I personally am not the Carmen Sandiego in my life, but I do have Carmen Sandiegos.
You have people to do the work for you.
Oh, my God. Like, my friend literally can pinpoint, like, okay, this is the moment where they stop being together because she was smiling in this picture from Tuesday, and then, like, on Thursday, she moved out. Like, it was just like, wait. You know the exact day and time?
I'm definitely proud of myself on being able to tell when a relationship was over based off of this. And without even them deleting pictures, because that's... obviously, when you know, you scroll and you'll be like, oh, I don't see her on his page no more.
But this is the telltale. When you know it's over for a dude is when it's like, Jen Flo, gotta get back right sometime, 2017, body on flow. But you know it's over for a girl where she's like looking over yonder into the abyss of the sunset.
Or puts those stupid, like, meme things with the words, life is only a struggle if you make it one. Just,
or just, when it's God's time, it's God's time, and what God has for you. I was like, you
was not talking about God in 2 years, but now you're talking about
you ain't even been to church.
So that was actually after Insecure. They have this segment where they do a process of the show that you just watched, and those that's the founder, I mean the creator and the star Issa Rae talking to Yvonne Orji, who plays her best friend in the show.
And she, you said, was
yeah. When I worked years ago for this nonprofit in Washington D.C., and she was one of our interns, mm-hmm. and she decided to make the transition into entertainment, and she is a star now, and she's amazing. But one of the things that for that clip right there, why it triggered, like, we need to talk about this, is because I think it's so timeless. And what when they start talking about the memes that people start putting on Facebook, and it just, these reflective memes of, you know, let go, let God. And so I was like, we need to talk about ways to kind of get past,
I mean,
you know.
I'm laughing about it, but I mean, Lord, it's so true. I mean, when people start, you know, you can tell. It's like, oh, Lord. I mean,
yeah. And you start, I don't know about you, but when someone that I know starts posting that, I immediately look at their Facebook, like, do I see the pictures of the significant other? And usually they're gone. And, you know, so there's signals. But I wanted to just give three tips to folks so that, you know, we are focusing on getting past the trauma of it and being able to, you know, one of the things that is recurring with when I come on the show is just really talking about getting back to yourself. And so one of the things first is really just accepting it, because when you don't accept it, that's when so many bad things or potential bad things happen. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, like these, the grief.
Let me interject. Do a little bit of an audible. I'm going to say, don't accept it. And this is what I mean by don't accept it. Don't accept that person in the first place. We've got to learn how to not get into certain situations.
Oh, so you're talking about preventative.
Exactly.
Stuff. Okay.
I'm on the pre-crime tip now.
The pre-crime.
Like
tip.
Minority Report.
Right.
I'm like, if you want to really prevent a disaster.
Okay.
Don't get into a disaster.
Okay. Well, see, that's a whole other show. Red flags. So I'm taking notes. But that's a whole other, because you're right. There are definitely red flags, especially when we talk so much about how people respond to conflict. You can really pick that up in just a date or just being.
You sure can. I'm gonna tell you, as the senior member, I can testify and I can prophesy.
Right, you're right. But so. I mean, so if we're talking about once you've ignored all the red flags and you're in this relationship that has not had, usually we have to rejuvenate ourselves after a relationship when it wasn't all bad, but it may have just been emotionally taxing. Yeah. And a lot of our self-esteem was wrapped up into who we were as a part of this relationship. And so that's really who we're talking to right now, the people who are finding themselves having to extricate themselves out of this this partnership where they formed an entity, you know what I mean? And so now they have to get back to being, you know, rolling solo.
But that's what, I mean, and you alluded to this earlier in the conversation, Khadijah. You can't, man, listen to the word, having to extricate yourself from a situation, you become an entity, a combined entity. You've got to maintain who you are. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much in love you are with whoever. You've got to maintain who you are, because nothing lasts forever necessarily.
Well, remember in the past that we've talked about these routines that people get wrapped up into. So it's not always significant relationships with other people and our intimate relationships as it is so much routine. Mm. You know, if you think of a job, can you imagine just what you do now if you just decided, I'm not going to be a journalist anymore. I'm just going to go and cook because I really like doing that.
Or roam the earth.
Right.
Came from Kung Fu.
Right. Aren't there things you'd have to extricate yourself from?
Yeah, I guess so.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it really has become part of who you are, your persona. And,
right.
You know, and so when we're in relationships, a lot of those things happen, especially when you begin to anticipate the needs of the other person. And sometimes you're anticipating needs, sometimes to the detriment of your own needs, but it's not anything that you're doing because they've asked you to. It's just because that's how you feel about this person, that, you know, they deserve it. And not giving any judgment to it that is right or wrong, but definitely if that type of relationship has been taking place, you really have to get to a place where, you know, my second bit of advice after you're accepting that it's over is remembering who you are. And a lot of that involves unlearning the self-sacrifice that happens a lot of times in relationships, but also trying to become familiar again with what it feels like being by yourself, and not only being by yourself at home, but actively being by yourself, engaged in activities, whether it's going to the movies, whether it's hanging out with folks, but not necessarily being part of this partnership with someone else.
You know, I like being by myself. the only thing that I have not achieved as far as that by yourselfness is concerned is the thing that you did, is travel by yourself.
Yeah.
I've never done that.
Really?
No.
Okay.
No, I've never done that.
Okay. And you mentioned a lot. So we need to set a goal for you to do that.
Yeah.
You
got
to pick a location.
I admire the fact that you did that. I really do.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing I can do just about anything else by myself, but I've never tried that. But I, again, you know, as far as your second piece of advice, you've got to, I mean, and this ain't nothing but old man wisdom talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to hold yourself tight.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to maintain yourself. And you have to be able to, you have to.
Are you talking about while in the relationship or after?
Both.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you can't get lost.
But you know, sometimes we do.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do. And you know, you hear all the time, the phrase, you got to, you know, staying open. Someone's got you open. And a lot of times that's what happens when we fall into this thing called love and a relationship. We just open and we down for anything, you know.
Oh, Lord.
And you know, so what happens is that once that's over and once we've opened ourselves to this experience with another person, what happens when that, you know, now we have to decide, what are we doing for ourselves as opposed to the things that we've done because somebody else wanted us to? And that is when I say remembering who you are. What about this relationship involved choices that you made because you thought it would keep the other person, and choices that you made because you really wanted to do it? So then it makes it really easy to move into what the third tip is, which is saying yes.
Saying yes to what?
Well, it goes hand in hand with number two, which is remembering who you are. Because saying yes is really, once you've realized that there were certain things that you probably were doing that you weren't necessarily doing only for yourself. Like, one example that I have is, you know, you didn't do any outdoor sports while you were in this relationship or with this person, because that person wasn't really into outdoor stuff. We find when we're in relationships that sometimes if the other person isn't completely down, then it diminishes our activeness and, you know, into doing whatever that is, whether it's eating a certain food, whether it's, you know, your partner might be allergic to something, allergic to cats.
But right there is we talked about red flags.
Mm-hmm.
If I was talking to somebody who was not into outdoor activities, that would be such a major conflict for me.
But I mean, everything isn't on our priority. For some of us, when we get in relationships, there are some things that we're able to push down. I'm not saying this is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this is healthy. And there's some things that we would just get into when we met somebody. Mm-hmm. So when they're not into it, us dropping it wasn't the end of the world because we weren't really invested in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
so,
it does.
So like picking up things that we may have started until we met this person. That's what I mean. So much as, you know, you just completely changed yourself completely for this person. Again, that's not healthy, but some of us do that, you know. So
that's interesting because I know, I mean, again, I mean, that would be such a red flag, like somebody who, and I mean, I guess maybe I'm operating from the position of being a journalist. I ask questions.
Yeah.
I'm always talking.
Right.
Like, you know, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. But I mean, no, that's to actually push down something that's significant, a significant part of your life, that's, man, that's toxic.
Yeah. You know? But sometimes we don't know that it is significant until we look back and it's like, wow, because I love the other person more than I love whatever it was that I stopped doing. But now, you know, what do I have? Because they're gone and I haven't invested in that. You know, so definitely remembering who you are will hopefully push you to say yes to these things that you may have given up.
Let's talk about the situation where somebody is basically devastated.
Yeah.
By a breakup, because it happens. I'm not. That's not a funny thing. People, it happens. It happens all the time, for myriad reasons. And I mean, you know, I'm not here to pass judgment on anybody.
Right. And the thing is, when we even think of devastation, the immediate thing is to think of depression and not being able to function. But if you really think of situations that we've heard where people have resorted to violence and just, you know, whether it's breaking car windows or doing, you know,
your windows
writing songs about that. I mean, that in itself is evidence that someone has not handled the breakup very well.
I'm telling myself that I'm going to go way back.
It's being recorded.
I think the worst relationship I ever was in, it was many, many years ago. I'm talking to like the early 90s. And I came out the house and my neighbor said, I had lost so much weight because I wasn't eating.
Oh, my goodness.
My neighbor said, oh, God. He said, boy, you look like a Cambodian.
Oh, my God. What does that even mean?
But, I mean, I'm laughing because nothing can stop me from eating now.
Right.
But it can get that intense for people.
Right.
And so the question I have about that is, how do you... You know, what should be the process of somebody who is devastated by a relationship? Should they, as our Jewish friends say, sit shiver for a while, or what do you do? I mean, is it just a time where you just got to get that emotion out, or do you just pick yourself up and keep? I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, the reason why I started with acceptance at number one is because I think that that's a process, and that goes back. So when we even think of, there are five and there are seven popular steps through grief that people have heard about, and it's this book that this woman named Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote. Someone gifted that to me years ago when I lost a family member, but looking back, she's actually modified them to apply to the loss. So the book was initially written for people who find out that they are dying.
Mm, okay.
Then she modified it for people who were losing someone to death. And then she modified it when she realized that there are similarities between grieving for someone who you lost because of death to losing a relationship because of the foundational role that it plays in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that she acknowledges is that we go through these steps of denial, anger, bargaining, which is, you know, I won't do it. I promise not to do this if this happens, depression, to acceptance, and that all of those steps that preface acceptance aren't necessarily linear.
Mm-hmm.
So they may happen. You may be in denial and then get really mad and then go back into denial. before you get to acceptance. And some of them can be skipped, but there is not necessarily linear. These are the things that could possibly happen.
Let me say a couple of things. First of all, I meant not, no disrespect to people of from the country of Cambodia. I mean, I'm not being funny. I didn't, that was not to disparage anybody who's Cambodian, because I know there are Cambodians who live in Baltimore and probably listen to our show. I'm just saying I lost a tremendous amount of weight. And my neighbor, in his ignorant way, was cracking on me because of that, because I was going through what I was going through in that relationship. That's number one. More importantly, God, please don't make a monkey out of me and have me go through something where I don't eat for a while, because I can't. That's hard for me to see, me being so uptight and upset that I'm not eating. So, Lord, please.
That ain't never happened to me. It's the complete opposite. But that is definitely one of those reactions. That's an example of, I would say, the depression phase.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, the depression phase.
It's real. I mean, let me be clear. I mean, I feel far removed from that type of stuff.
Right.
Thank God. But I remember it clearly, and it's I mean, it can be really devastating and hard get through.
Yeah, for me, back in my 20s, for me, it was the poems, listening to Sade, crying my eyes out, and writing the poems, and oh my goodness. And we laugh, but when you're in that moment, gosh, it feels like it is the worst possible thing that can happen. And so once you get to this place of acceptance, it's really important to just keep the momentum going with, all right, I accept this, and looking to self, what is it that self needs right now? And right. So when you're remembering who you were and who you are, and you're like, oh my goodness, I can do this now, or and it's not necessarily, again, everyone isn't necessarily in these relationships with people who are jail, wardens, and telling you. But sometimes we sacrifice and we stop ourselves from doing things because we think that that is what is going to make this relationship stick together, or stay together. So it's really necessary for us just to keep the momentum going after we get to this place of acceptance.
Let me give one more really clear sign that you're in a really bad situation and you're going through it. If you go to sleep with your shoes on, you go to bed with your
Sean, oh my God.
When you go to bed with your shoes on, then
you need to give context.
You're tore up. All I can say. I'll leave it there. Let's take a phone call. Let's go to Kim in Pikesville. Kim, you are on with Khadijah Ali Coleman. How you doing, Kim?
Red Bull down, my brother. Red Bull down.
Red Bull down, brother. Red Bull down.
Let me tell you, man, you conjured up, this conversation has conjured up a situation. I met a young lady at Sulphur Library.
At what library?
Sulphur Library in Morgan.
Okay, yeah, I got you.
One night, studying, beautiful, walked up, says, hi, how you doing? We start talking, and I instantaneously fell in love. Mm. 6 months later, this young lady told me she didn't want to see me no more. I sat on the edge of my bed for 2 weeks and cried a river.
Oh, well, that's great.
This is the thing.
Did you feel better?
Much better, but it wasn't until after somebody said two things to me. My neighbor said one thing and my mother said another. My mother said, never let somebody diminish your self-worth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was number one, because you don't want to put more stock in somebody else than you do in yourself.
Right.
And my neighbor said, you got to be kidding, man. There's many young ladies before this young lady that's you hanging out with. He said, there's more fish in the sea, and there are more fish in the sea that could see you for who you really are versus somebody who couldn't.
Yeah.
So get back out there. And the minute I got back out there, and I'm a social person, but it didn't take very much. But the whole thing about self-worth can combat a lot of that.
Amen.
Because
exactly.
Once you realize that you are, you're a good person,
yes,
that accounts for a lot.
Yes. Absolutely true.
Remembering who you are, that's right.
Exactly,
that's
exactly.
Right.
And, and I see this person today. And one time they said to me, if I'd have known, I said, you should have known.
That's right.
There it is. Kim, thank you, brother. Appreciate your time. Yeah, that's self. You can't let it. I mean, sitting on the edge of the bed. I've been every scenario you can think of. Right. I just about, you know.
But it makes you, I mean, there is value in the resiliency coming on the other end of a relationship. I mean, that's real, and that's real talk. I'm sure you've learned some things about who you are as a partner, some things that you aren't willing to sacrifice anymore as a partner, some things that you would probably sacrifice more of as a partner. You know, those are the things that we have to really hold on to even want to say yes again to another relationship. You know, some of the best relationships are born from having some of the worst experiences in a relationship. And that's real talk.
Well, we may have to. I think that may be a good spot to end the conversation. I mean, because when you can pull victory out of defeat,
yeah,
that's always a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had this conversation.
as wild as it was. Oh, yes.
Khadijah Ali Coleman is the creative midwife. She is the founder of Liberated Muse Arts Group and the host of this segment. Khadijah, it's always good to see you and talk about these things.
Oh, same here, Sean.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is it for us. That is it for First Edition. It is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by executive producer Sean Yost, associate producer Iorio Digizua. Our board operators are Andre Melton and Ty Rice. First Edition interns are Isaiah George, Wyman Jones, Kristen West, Alex Blanc, and Valentin Davis. Stay tuned for Keep It Moving with Marsha Jews next, right here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. I'm Sean Yost. Peace. You're doing things you wouldn't before.